Lou's fan fiction book. That'll be interesting.
Oh, did you not get all the quotes I was sending you? Those are all quotes directly from that book. I mean, Alex and I stayed up for probably a good 15 minutes reading stuff, and this is just the free free portion of the book that it gives you for free. Whatever.
The preface?
No, the excerpt. There we go. Adam can speak English.
Oh, yeah. All the quotes. Okay. Yeah. You're going to talk about my actual like website. Oh, God.
Oh, no, I wasn't going to say that. I was just going to say that you actually have. I was going to kind of say that your website, you know, your vanity is taken by a guy who has basically a fan fiction book about you. And you live with a racist cat. You live by yourself with a racist cat. And he says right there in the book, in the stuff you're reading, that his cat doesn't like black people. I was like, dang, what is going on here?
I don't know what to do about that. I think...
just sue him for defamation, you know?
Yeah, right? Oh, God.
Get a takedown notice, you know? I do not own a cat, let alone a racist cat.
Yeah, oh, God, I don't know what to do with that. I seriously want to just, like, throw $200 at the guy and see if he'll kick rocks.
I don't know, man. I bought a book, you know, one for each one of my friends. So I think he made more than $200 off me in the last, you know, couple days. So he might tell you to go kick rocks.
If frugal fucking Adam bought a book for each one of his friends, I'm going to come drive to Northern California and beat you.
Just let me know when you make the offer and then I'll counter. I'll give you $250 just to keep the website going.
Oh, yeah. I seriously, I don't know what his dollar would be. And that's part of the terrible part of like domains is that like you have to like enter an offer, enter a command, like go through that process. I'm like, oh.
Well, we've technically already started the episode, so let's just keep going.
Yeah, right? What the heck? Might as well.
Just remove the fan fiction book off the bottom of the intro list because we just talked about it.
We'll just tell everybody, you know, hey, the intro just got moved. Welcome to the episode 32, guys. I want to just pay that guy off, but I can't imagine giving him more than $300 of my money. It's just under my skin. He's been under my skin for 10 years.
Yeah, it gave me 50 pages or so. I don't know the exact number, but it gave me a lot of pages of joy. And I could just, like, almost like roulette, right? Like, I could just spin the wheel a little bit and then give it a little flick on the scroll. And then wherever I landed, I could read, like, five lines, and I would find something that was just atrocious. And I was like, this is fantastic.
I'm glad you are getting some, you know, pure enjoyment out of my... terrible.
Well, let's just go through a little bit of the flavor that is the quotes that I was sending you. Oh man, what was it? Lou, you are truly weird guy, but I like you anyway, even if you are a white man.
Yeah. Nope. I'm not happy.
Oh man, I'm happy. Yeah, there was a bad one too. That was you talk about the Me Too movement, man. Like you definitely had a not good one. And I'm not saying you, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, by proxy. You said, felt that Teresa needed a swift kick in the ass, but didn't say so. After all, this guy and he were friends, and friends don't say bad things about friends' wives, but thinking a bad thing about a friend's spouse was still permitted in the handbook of acceptable male behavior. Damn.
I'm silently shaking my head right now.
You have a fan fiction book, and it's amazing, and I hope that the guy turns you down when you give him an offer.
This is another example of Adam not being on my side. What can I say?
I'm on your side for most things, right? But this was so good, man. Like, you can't pass that up. Anyway, that's enough. Moving on.
So I guess we should say this week we did a little switcheroo, didn't we? With the responsibilities and roles.
Yeah, so I put this in as another section of looking under the hood of the podcast and kind of giving some insight. So usually it's always been me editing, And Lou, you've been handling like the front end of, you know, the site and the show notes and things like that. So, you know, I thought, I was like, hey, this would kind of be fun. Let's switch it up and do different things. That way we can both become, I'd say, better at the areas of the podcast that we're not so great at, let's say, or we're not as experienced in. So for me, that was, you know, managing all the show notes, which I failed at because I missed a bunch of things, but they're in there now, so it's okay. And Lou, that meant you got to spend some time editing. So I don't know. I think it was a good exercise for me. I don't know if you felt the same way.
Yeah, I think I definitely learned a lot. And it took considerably longer than what Adam tells me he edits the podcast in. But I think that's just, you know, hopefully with time going to become easier. My ear will hear stuff more and be able to work through stuff. So, you know, it's something that will come with time, but it is, it's good. I think overall it's for the best that we can both do any part of the podcast that we need to.
We can be jacks of all trades, masters of none. It's great.
It definitely is. It definitely is. So you put something in here about the Facebook data. I assume I'm going to be just frank. I didn't read the link at all. I assume this has something to do with, the data they collect.
Yeah, so this is the Cambridge Analytica scandal that's kind of happened recently, where basically Facebook, you know, gives a bunch of data to just the way they handle data, right? It's not in the best way. So they basically gave a bunch of data to this data firm for research and analytics. And after that, that firm gave it to someone else and, you know, then it was used for something else, and people didn't really know that all their data was going to be used in this scenario. So people are pretty upset. That's the big TLDR that I have. And, you know, Congress is calling for, you know, Facebook, you know, CEO to testify, and, you know, they're talking about regulating Facebook, and everyone's going on the hashtag delete Facebook, you know, trend. So I don't know, man, like I don't use Facebook that much. So maybe it's time for me to actually like get rid of mine. I don't think that's, you know, it's something I don't use. And if it's going to make a statement to like, hey, you know, treat your data better, cool. But I feel like that's just a drop in the bucket, you know, for all the people that will still continue to use Facebook, you know, despite knowing that they do shady things with your data. Just like we all know that Google harvests a bunch of data. And I'm not going to lie, like I just fed Google a bunch of data about the upcoming trip that I'm taking because the Google Trips app will just handle all my itinerary and put it all in one place, and I can share that with a lot of people. And it was just easy to do because I have a Gmail and that's where all the itinerary goes to. So why not just display that in another way? And then they can know everything about me. But the reason I put this in here is, you know, we talk about data and privacy, and I know it's kind of, you know, hypocritical of me to say like, hey, you know, protect your data, and I'm giving all my data to, you know, said company that I just mentioned. But I think it's something that's important to just kind of bring up briefly. And I know you're probably aware of this whole scandal, but I think it's just another opportunity to shed some light on data privacy.
So I was already aware that Cambridge Analytica, you know, kind of scandal, it's all over the news to say the least. But I think one thing that was really interesting to me was I recently saw somebody on Twitter say like, hey, you should try to request your archive of Facebook and see what data they have on you. And that was really, really interesting. I actually went through the thought exercise and actually did this. And it's kind of a process. You request your data, they, you know, wake you, wait a little bit, and then they send you a zip file of all of your data. And, it has all your pictures and, you know, essentially everybody you've interacted with, every friend. It has contacts, which I'm not 100% certain how they're getting that information, in the sense that
that's Messenger, man. Facebook Messenger harvested everything.
So it's not all Messenger. I should be clear about that. There is contacts in my contacts that I have never met. I don't know these people. There's a good handful of them too. And I'm not quite sure where they're from. So whether they think they're ties to me, or whether, you know, I mean, there is also the capability that what, like on an iPhone or an Android phone, you give Facebook access to your contacts, and maybe they scrape that whole database and say, cool. Now we know all these people, you know. But I mean, I'm not 100% certain where all that data came from. And that was kind of super creepy. There's a lot of stuff that's interesting there. They also explain what advertisers have your contact information. And there's a good list of like, I don't know, 20 or so that have my contact information. I don't really know how they have my contact information. I don't recall ever saying, sure, they could have my contact information. So it seems skeptical, I guess I would say, to the least, and very slimy to the point where the only reason I really stick with Facebook at this point is something like family. You know, my parents are at this point on Facebook because there's 2 billion people or something like that on Facebook now. So finally we got all these people to like one platform and we can share photos and everybody sees it, and we don't have to go do it to 10 different, you know, websites to get everybody to see it. But they're just a slimy company in a lot of ways. And really, in a lot of ways, Twitter's not that much better. I mean, if you log into your Twitter account and do the same thing, they have a lot of data on you too. So, I mean, I have considered something like Manton Reese's, like it's a microblog. But I don't know that I could get people to actually come to my site.
I think the way that I've always approached this is just whatever I put on the internet is public, no matter what. Like if I'm going to post a picture of something, if I'm going to do something, like that's considered public. So I've kind of made peace with whatever I'm doing at that time. If I'm choosing to put that online or participate in some activity, I just assume that, you know, it's all being public. And I go through, you know, you can go through all sorts of different, you know, things to protect yourself where you talk about doing VPN or ask, you know, not to track me. But as soon as you log into a service that you've accepted terms and conditions on, you know, the game's over. So basically any interaction that I have with that service, namely Facebook and Google, I've accepted the fact that I know this is going to be public, and I've made peace with the fact that it's going to be public. And if there's something that I don't want being public, I'm going to send that somewhere else. But to your point, like you said, the kind of the dots that they can connect or the information that they can derive from a person, like you said, not just, you know, what you've actually contributed, but what they can kind of assume about you, right? Your political affiliation, your religious affiliation, you know, they can, your demographic, your age, like this is stuff that they can know without actually, you know, having the raw data or having you say like, yeah, here's my birth date, or you can have my birth date, right? If you just say, yeah, you can look at the activity on Facebook, like that's fine. You know, the things that I've liked or the pages I've liked, the things that I've clicked on, the articles I've read, you know, they just kind of put all this information together and send it off to people, and namely advertisers, right? Or these research firms, and they can use that however they want. And like you said, your contact information is now in the hands of 20 different people. And let's say you kind of trusted Facebook to handle your data, but do you trust these 20 different companies to handle your data the same way? It's very, you know, it's a slippery slope argument where it's like, hey, you give them one thing, you're going to give them more things, they're just going to know more and more, and then, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I think getting rid of Facebook is one thing, right? And doing some microblog, you know, where people can go to visit. But the one thing I like about Twitter, you know, to your point, yeah, like sure, they know every tweet that I look at and everything that I like. But when I put something on Twitter, there's no making it private, right? Like it's just out there for the world to see. And I think that's a big difference, right? That's why Twitter has problems, you know, controlling their platform, because it is, you know, more open than Facebook's is. But Facebook has more control over the data that they see and the ads that they can serve and the revenue that they can make, which is why, you know, Facebook, you know, they were making at least a decent amount of revenue at one point, but their stock fell a bunch and we've continued to see this thing play out. But I think we've talked about it enough, unless you have any closing thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have any closing thoughts. It's slimy. I'm not super happy about it. And I really don't see a much better solution, at least at this time, and maybe at some point something will come along that will be better, but for now it is what it is. Anyway, so in a little bit of follow-up from last week, because we're doing the switcheroo, I think it is only fair that we kind of just say if we're fucking up, you should just let us know. Keep us honest, and you know, tweet at us. There's email options on the website. to get at us privately if you'd prefer to not do it publicly. There's plenty of ways to get in contact with us that way. You know, if something's wrong or you want it to be different, the only way we're going to know is feedback. We're definitely open to that. So, Adam, you have anything else you want to add to that?
The one thing I would say is, you know, don't be like me. Be nice with your feedback. And the big thing is be constructive. I know we've mentioned that a couple of times, but like, we welcome any feedback, you know, positive, constructive, whatever it is. And, you know, we do this show in part to kind of keep in touch with each other, but in a large part, it's for, you know, everyone to listen to, you know, as we have a fun time doing it. And we'd love if, you know, people have a fun time listening to it. So if you're not, for some reason, you know, let us know. Like, communication is a two-way street, and in a podcast medium, you know, we're broadcasting to the world very much like, you know, from a big bullhorn or, you know, from a corner, but we can hear stuff coming back. So it just takes a little bit, you know, there's that little tape delay, but yeah, please send your comments, send your feedback, rate and review us on iTunes. The works.
So I love that you basically said how you want your feedback delivered. You said, don't give me a shit sandwich, essentially. You want the good, the bad, and then the good again, I guess, or something to that effect.
No, I didn't say in any order. I'm just saying, if you're going to give like negative feedback, or let's say constructive feedback, don't just like say your podcast sucks, or you guys suck ass, you know, or you guys are horrible people. It's like, okay, well, that's great. Thanks for that, but what can I do with that, you know? Like I said, so be constructive. It's like, you guys are horrible because Adam always interrupts Lou. It's like, okay, well, now I know that I can be less horrible by not interrupting you. That's all I'm saying.
That's fair. I think that's a like a decent bit of constructive feedback is that, yeah, I mean, that is good constructive feedback if delivered like that.
Yeah, I mean, you still said I sucked, and that's fine. Like, I suck because X. I just need the X. It's all for X. Okay, I can do that now.
Okay, it's all for X, definitely. So it's something that I think we want to put out there a little bit this week is a little bit of a kind of a question, because we talked about our most hated repairs and
no, this you're doing this wrong. You read this wrong. This was actually a listener actually requested this. They asked me, they said, "Well, what's your most hated repair?"
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. See? So I said leave comments because let me indent this in the follow-up so we know it's part of the same topic. There we go.
There we go. Like man, that actually helped a lot.
See, man? I'm still learning. I'm still learning about the show notes thing. I'm still learning how to structure an outline correctly. But yeah, so a listener asked, like, what's your most hated repair? Or what's the most hated repair that you've performed? So I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot for this one, but if you want me to go first, I will.
Yeah, go first. I'm curious where you go, and then I will kind of think through my options here.
So my most hated repair, and I'm assuming we're talking tech repairs, because I do have a most hated other repair, and the most hated other repair I had was not for reasons of it being difficult, but for the reason of why I had to repair it. Since I've already kind of like given most of it away, is I had to replace one of the alternator belts on the truck that I have, which, you know, it doesn't sound that bad. You know, I was driving one day and the belt snapped and I was like, oh, that's weird. And then the battery light was on. So I'm like, well, alternator belt, you know, definitely broke. I got to get another one. But the reason for that was because a rat had climbed up into the compartment of the car. And as I turned on said car and started driving, rat decided to jump into the fan of the car, and rat guts then went everywhere. And me having to be somewhere was like, okay, well, let me leave this car out in the sun in, you know, Southern California in the middle of summer for a day before I finally get around to repairing it. But then, you know, you slide into the car and take a big whiff and see just blood and guts everywhere. That's the most hated car repair I've had to do. Like I said, not because it was difficult, but because of the mess. But hated tech repair, right? So my most hated tech repair is my 2006 Mac Mini. It's the one where you had to break out the right tool for the job, Lou, which was a putty knife. And that was somehow deemed the right tool for the job. And no matter how hard I tried, and I've opened this Mac Mini, I would say at least 6 times. And each time I open it, I feel like I lose another one of the clips that that you have to secure the thing. So I think I'm like rocking like maybe like one or two on each side, maybe three on like the left side. But oh man, that computer, it was great looking and it was really cool, really small, but it was a pain in the butt to open, and it was a pain in the butt, you know, to open without breaking. And I've since got, you know, kind of a feel for it, but like you said, it would be great if there was a better tool to open that computer.
I love that that's the official tool.
Right. We talked about last time, the right tool for the job. And the right tool for the job in this case is a putty knife. I'm like, what? You mean a putty knife for like applying putty?
Yep, you can do wall repairs and open your Mac Mini with the same tool.
Hey man, multifunction tools. That putty knife's going to be the Swiss Army, you know, knife of repairs soon, right? Maybe that's what they thought. Like maybe, because remember they had the IMAX too that had the little card that you could open with, right? The white IMAX is around the same time where you had to use the little like credit card basically to unlatch the display bezel. Ugh, just man, that period of repair was just, it's a dark time.
Yeah, so it's really funny that you mentioned this period of repair, because I think the two repairs that I'm going back and forth between are from this period. So it was definitely a dark time. It definitely was. I think the repair I hated most was a display on the MacBook, the white MacBook. When you had to take that bezel off with all the clips and the bezel, and all to get that freaking display out. That was kind of my nightmare back in the day. The other one that comes to mind is like the Silver Key MacBook Pro. That taking that thing apart was never fun. I opened mine, I don't know, 3 or 4 times for different things. And I mean, it was a beautiful Mac from the outside. By leaps and bounds ahead of, you know, the other manufacturers of the day, shipping in plastic still. And it was a great Mac, but inside it looked sort of horrendous, if you ask me. But I think I'm going to have to say my worst was the display on the 2006, 2007 white MacBook.
Oh, there you go. That was a fun computer to take apart.
I'm glad you liked it, because I'm glad I only did that repair like twice, I think, ever, and then I was done with it. I didn't want to ever do it one again.
So I think one of the things about repairing something is, and you despise doing it like the first time, right? And the second time you know all these little tricks that you learned from the first time, and then by the fifth time that you do it, you kind of take pride in being able to do it, right? Because you're like, oh, I know all of the tricks how to do this. I know how to make sure that these cables all line up the right way and that I have tons of space left over. Like, I think you get just so good at doing a horrible repair that you actually kind of take pride in doing the horrible repair. So you're like, oh, I can do this. Like I said, the fourth time I took apart the Mac Mini, it's like, you know what? Like, yeah, I'll take that thing open. I'm not afraid of it. But all the other times, like, well, it was such a nightmare to open the first time. I don't know if I want to do it again. So as with anything, you get better with time. It's kind of the theme of this podcast, right? Things just get better with age.
Yeah, so I totally have to agree with that, because I think the easiest way to approach something like this is to just repair it. Like, I know it seems like a nightmare the first one or two times you do it, but if you're the person that jumps up and says, yeah, I'll do that, and you know, if you're like, you know, head first and just going to figure it out, and it's going to be maybe tough that first couple times, but once you get through that, man, it's a breeze, because like you become just more comfortable doing it. You gain knowledge and insight just of how the inside of the thing works too. And that's true of like new electronics and old electronics. It doesn't really matter what you're working with. If you're willing to, you know, step up and say, I'll do it, it's only going to benefit you.
Agreed.
All right, so this week we want to talk a little bit about brand loyalty, which, let's just put it this way, I don't think Adam and I have any of. So
wait, what
do you think? I have any brand loyalty?
Yeah, I was like, what do you, well, you put this topic in there, right? Like, just like last time I put in the DIY horror story one, this was definitely a topic you put in there. And, you know, we haven't gone through a topic, you know, brainstorming session in a while. So we're kind of like scraping towards the bottom of the barrel with some of these topics, you know, that we've just kind of put off, you know, for a long time. So when we got to this topic, you know, I was like, all right, well, I have to write the outline for this. So I'm like, well, what do you mean, Lou? What you mean? I was like, I can say that you definitely have brand loyalty to a certain shorts manufacturer. And do they make something other than shorts? I think they make yoga pants and stuff too, right? Your that French company that you buy expensive shorts from.
It has no accents. It's called Lululemon.
Lululemon. Yeah. Okay. Cool. So yeah. So what do you mean, Lou? Are you talking about just brand loyalty, where you just blindly buy these products, or you'll always buy these shorts, or what do you mean?
So I mean, I think you can take brand loyalty two different ways. There are the, I would say, fanboys of a company, and this is true in tech and in any industry, really. I mean, there are fanboys of Disney, there are fanboys of any sort of major brand, Nike and so on, that will automatically whip out their, you know, credit card or whatever you want to call it, checkbook, old school, you know, and just buy whatever this company puts out. I don't think that I want to talk so much about them, because I don't find that super interesting. I'm more akin to, I want to talk about the, what is your number one, number two that, you know, in any given area you go to. And for me, brand loyalty is like, hey, I'm shopping for a hard drive. What company do I think of first? Not that I'm going to necessarily set, you know, my eyes on them and say 100% I'm going with them, but just, you know, we all have that affinity towards one brand. And if you have an affinity towards a brand, to me, that means you have some loyalty to them.
I don't know. I think you can be attracted to something, but being loyal to them means that you kind of like support them no matter what, or you almost kind of trend on that fanboy spectrum, in my opinion. But so that kind of leads into my next question, is like, yeah, how far do you want to take this? Like, I know you said the top two of something, like, do you want to go as far as like talking food, cars, like web services, social networks? Like, how far do you want to go?
I mean, I think we should touch on at least a few of these, just from our own perspective. You know, it's not necessarily a bad thing, I think, to talk about big brands that we like in these areas. But I definitely don't want to center around that 100%. But I mean, throw a few at me. What is your when I say food and cars, what are your food and cars that are kind of your go-tos?
So, okay, that's so food. Let me just say this, is there are restaurants that I will go to all the time. And it's because we really enjoy the restaurants and we enjoy the service and we know the, you know, the people that work there. So I know I've mentioned this, every Sunday we go to a bakery in Santa Cruz. It's called The Buttery. And I can say that I have loyalty to them because we go there every week and we always kind of get the same things. And it's more of a family tradition, but they make, you know, really good food. And I like going there and I like the atmosphere and the kids like it. So I can definitely say when we're like, hey, you know, what kind of, you know, we're kind of hankering from for some croissants or, you know, some pastries or something. It's like, well, let's go here, you know, because I really like them. So food, I'll just say The Buttery because we go there every week. So I'm definitely loyal to that establishment. If they're listening, I love your food. As far as cars go, you know, I used to be like a really big Chevy guy. Like I would always say, you know, like, oh, Chevy cars here, you know, Chevy cars this. And to a point that was just because my dad was always an American car guy and he very much loved Chevy, and you were either a Chevy or a Ford guy. And I fell on the Chevy spectrum. But now, like, I have two non-US cars. I have a Toyota and a Nissan, right? So it's like, I don't really have any loyalty to cars. Like, I'll research what's good and I'll go buy that. So I don't have a loyalty to cars. And I think that's kind of funny, right? Where I have a definite one on one side and I have no preference on the other.
So I think it's really funny. We're going to sound like same song, second verse here in some ways. You know, I did put in the outline here, especially with cars. You basically have to insert like grandpa jokes here because you're totally right. Like our parents and my grandparents, they were the folks that were like, hey, you buy American made and we're either buying Ford or Chevy. And even my dad was like that very young, and he's still like that today. I mean, it's so funny. I just saw my dad like a couple of weeks ago, and he's like, you know, oh, I just bought a new car. And I was like, oh, cool, let's take a look. And, you know, I'm all excited for him, you know, getting a new car. He's been talking about it. He, you know, he's the guy that, you know, buys a car, drives it 150,000 miles until the thing, you know, the engine drops out of the thing and finally doesn't, you know, is going to cost him more than the car is worth, and then he goes and buys another one. And what does he go buy? He goes and buys a Chevy, and you know, or a GM product, I guess I should say. And he's always done that for 20 years that I've known him. He's always bought American-made cars. And I did that for my first car, but my second car, I was done with it. I had the reliability problems, and he just totally accepts the reliability problems. He just is like, you know, I build that into my head. It's part of it. And I'm like, Dad, you're stubborn. But, you know, I went and bought a Honda, and I do sense some degree of brand loyalty to that. I guess I would say brand loyalty in the respect that I more have brand loyalty to non-US, if that makes sense. I know that the reliability seems to be better on those cars, and I accept that, and I'm attracted to that. I don't want to have to do car repairs, and so that keeps me sort of looking at the Toyota, the Honda, the, you know, Nissans, and so on and so forth. So as far as cars go, at least for the moment, it's a Honda. It will be that way for quite some time, you know, that could change. When I say that for quite some time, it's just because the mileage on my car is pretty low. I have no real reason to change cars anytime soon. As far as food goes, I'm from California, so, you know, this is going to be one of those like shockers. I'm an In-N-Out fan. I'm a fan of Chipotle. I'm a fan of any Berto's. You know, it's not a big surprise that way, but I would say like my go-tos are definitely going to be the In-N-Out, Chipotle. On a healthier option level, I do love a chain called Flame Broiler, so that's a good option as well. So I don't know, I kind of go to those.
I miss Flame Broiler so much. Miss it so much. Flame Broiler was just delicious.
It's great, man. Like cheap, good food. Like you just can't complain with that.
I don't know if it's healthy. You know, they use all dark meat stuff, right? Unless you request the white meat. Do you do white meat or dark meat?
It depends. It really depends. And the reason I say it depends is because it depends on if I'm in a rush or not. Because if they do the light meat option, they like cook it like, you know, it's one of these restaurants that's kind of like a Chipotle. There's a bunch of meat sitting there. They've already cooked. It's, you know, just kind of in the warmer and cooked probably a half hour ago or whatever. And they scoop it in and you're good to go. If you want white meat, they're going to literally throw like one breast of white meat, you know, up there and cook that. And then, you know, you got to wait 10 minutes while they cook it. So if I'm in a rush, no, I'm not doing that. But I'd say like 50-50 on the white meat.
Oh, man. I used to always get the white meat. And for those who don't know, Flame Broiler is just like a chicken rice bowl, right? Teriyaki chicken rice bowl. I mean, that's pretty fair to say, right?
Yeah. And it really is. Depends on how hard you go with the you know, the teriyaki sauce, how bad that's going to get for you, and also how do you do the vegetables, because they do vegetables or you can do like all rice and that's going to get pretty unhealthy pretty quickly.
Well, I mean, so white meat, the rice, and let's say some of the teriyaki sauce and chili sauce and all the green onions that they put on there, like, it's not horrible. I think what it was like 480 calories for a bowl or something. Like, it's not bad.
Yeah, it's not terrible, that's for sure. There are definitely worse options. Chipotle and In-N-Out are going to be way worse for you. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, well, definitely. So, did you know, like, In-N-Out is a really polarizing, like, debate, like, whether people like In-N-Out or not. And, you know, being from Southern California, it was just, like, accepted that everyone loved In-N-Out, and wherever you went, you know, people just loved In-N-Out. You'd mentioned, you know, going to grab a burger and if there was an In-N-Out nearby, like that's just by default where you were going. But as I've moved further away from Southern California, there are people who despise In-N-Out, and like people that I've worked with, people that I've, you know, stayed with, like, there are people that just hate it. They, like, you mentioned it, and they're like, oh, it's just the worst. And they will choose, like, Jack in the Box or McDonald's over In-N-Out any day. And I'm just kind of like, man, I never knew this was a problem until I, you know, left my little tiny bubble of Southern California. So it's just much more apparent to me now.
I was definitely aware of this. It's not something I was, like, unaware of, but it's something that is, I think I really have to respect a lot of the burger chains, the big burger chains, for different things. I mean, a lot of times people say they want to compare In-N-Out to Five Guys and Five Guys to Shake Shack. And, you know, you kind of start like drawing these parallels. And I don't know, man, I've eaten at Shake Shack and I've eaten at Five Guys. And don't get me wrong, a burger at In-N-Out and Five Guys and Shake Shack is a phenomenal burger. There's no burger that I think is like terrible and I wouldn't go back for it kind of thing. You know, the burger I'm not going to go back for is the burger at Applebee's, not the burger at any one of those. But what I can say is I treat them very, very differently. You know, I mean, it to me goes back to your example of like the Mexican restaurant so that you can get a $3 breakfast burrito. In-N-Out is a good, like, solid burger option for $7 for the whole meal. And that is completely different to me than Shake Shack, where I'm going to pay, you know, $14 for the same meal. And it's still not going to be probably quite as satisfying, but the quality of the ingredients is probably even higher than In-N-Out. And, you know, Five Guys gives me 1,000 condiment options and a bag full of fries, you know, so
grease balls.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's they're very different to me on paper. They all serve the same thing, but you really are not comparing apples to apples in that respect.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me. Like, I understand why, but, you know, I think it's funny how you mentioned, like, brand loyalty, right? And this kind of gets into, you know, what we'll talk about in a little bit, right? But all these different reasons for brand loyalty. So, but before we get into that, so since this is more of a tech podcast, right? We talk about technology and culture. I guess we kind of want to touch on brand loyalty in tech. So the question I have is, do you think people are more susceptible to have brand loyalty with technology?
Yes, I do, for a vast majority of things. And I think what drives that brand loyalty, at least in today's world, is ecosystems. People get stuck in an ecosystem and they don't want to go through the mess of changing from that ecosystem. And let's face it. Yeah. I mean, if you're tech savvy, you could work through it. Is it going to be some work to do? Yes. Are there apps and things that can aid you in that? Yes. But for the average, you know, 35 to 55 year old person who wants to switch between, you know, Mac PC, PC to Mac, or, you know, iPhone to Android, Android to iPhone. It is immensely complicated for somebody like that to go through that process. And so I think those sort of things drive brand loyalty in tech.
Yeah. So I can agree with you on that sense, right? Where, and this is kind of like all the analogies that they use, right? Like once you get into the walled garden or once you get into this ecosystem, like it's harder to leave. And things being sticky means, you know, you kind of hang around or because everyone's there, right? And I think that's another big driving factor is, you know, people have brand loyalty based on, you know, where everyone's at, right? They'll go there, and then once they're there, they don't want to, you know, go through the headache of leaving or doing that. And I don't know if that's necessarily brand loyalty, more as it's just kind of, you know, being forced to stick with, you know, a solution or a choice because you don't want to go through the hassle of leaving. I guess in a sense, right, you can compare the In-N-Out and the Cars one to that too, right? Where you know it might be bad, but hey, you know, this is what you know and it's going to be easy and you're comfortable with making this choice. But I think with tech, right, the one thing that I notice is that it's an ever-changing landscape, right? So things change constantly and we talk about this all the time. And you say the tech savvy they're always just willing to drop and leave something and go to something else. So it's like, hey, you know what? If a new hotness comes out tomorrow, I'm on the new hotness. Like, I'm not on this old thing anymore, right? If there's a whole new, you know, processor architecture that comes out that's supposed to be 50 times better, like, I will up and leave because that's attractive to me. And I have no obligation to stay with what I currently have. So I think it's funny how, and I know you pointed this out, so I kind of want to rehash it, is I think there's a line where the people who, you know, use technology, not necessarily as enthusiasts, but just as, you know, consumers of tech, they're much more likely to have brand loyalty. And I would say that tech enthusiasts and, you know, people who kind of live in the industry, work in the industry, are much less likely to have any form of brand loyalty. And they're much more, you know, kind of, I guess, prone to jump from service to service just based on whatever is going to solve their problem in the best way.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and the proof is kind of in the pudding that way for those of us that are in the tech industry. If you look at, you know, I think this is no, you know, secret that you and I both use 1Password. If you look at my 1Password, and I don't know about you, I don't really keep my 1Password clean in the sense that, like, if I don't use an account anymore, I don't, like, delete it from my 1Password. I just leave it in there. And if I ever need it, I'll go back to it. But my 1Password has like something like 400 logins in it, you know? And for most people, that's just insane to think about. But that just shows you how, you know, someone who is more tech savvy is less sticky to one platform or is willing to move around and say, hey, you know, this is going to solve my problem for the moment. So cool. I'll create an account and, you know, get started on that, you know?
Can I just say thank you, Lou, for reminding me that you are a hoarder. I think it hasn't been brought up in a while, but I think that we all need to just sit back and acknowledge that, yep, you are still a hoarder of technology and of digital data.
So you're saying I should just delete all the accounts from 1Password, or what is the better option?
If you don't need them, sure.
I mean, but then here's the problem that'll come up. In 2 years, I will maybe need something, and then I'll go back to that website, and I'm going to go, it's going to go, oh, you have an account already. And then I'm going to have to play the game of reset password. I'm like, well, why am now I just look like a, you know, any normal layperson who, you know, doesn't know their password.
Lou, I swear this is just like what every hoarder says on the show Hoarders. Like, everything that you just said, your entire justification is verbatim what people would say on that show Hoarders. And you still have probably never seen an episode, correct?
Yeah, no, I haven't. Do we need to, like, amend my movie watching for the year and just, like, add one episode of Hoarders?
I will gladly give up a month of a movie. Like, if you pick a movie off the list that you don't want to watch, I will make it to where you have to watch at least 3 episodes of Hoarders that I get to pick.
Okay. I will fully accept that challenge. I will fully accept that challenge. I need to look at this, but I'll get back to you on what episode or what movie I'm not watching this year.
Okay, that's perfect, because I swear, you know, I know Gerald brought this up when we first, you know, had the podcast, and I think this is going to be a very good thing therapeutically for you to acknowledge your hoarding tendencies. And then I get to play like the A&E, you know, hired junk guy who just, you know, is there to clean up and is just like, yeah, we want to get rid of all these passwords, but he won't let us clean it up. You know, he's got to clean it up and he just won't let us do it. Oh man. Okay. I'm really excited about this. So follow up for another day. Just let me know which movie. I'll get to work on picking the episodes. So anyways, like you said, yeah, you have a bunch of logins, right? Because you've signed up for every service and you'll just go try things, you know, and you may not use them ever again, or in 2 years, you may go back to using them. But like you said, being a tech enthusiast, it does mean that you're more likely to kind of go jump from place to place. So I think we talked about, you know, at least brand loyalties in tech and some of the other examples of brand loyalties that we have, but we touched on a couple different reasons, right? The convenience has definitely been one of them. And, you know, just the familiarity, or, you know, it's what your parents bought or anything like that. So are there any other reasons that you want to kind of call out for having brand loyalty, or reasons why we have brand loyalty?
Well, I mean, And I've mentioned this before. This is a big one for me. Warranties and service, customer service, or just, you know, the way some product or company evokes feeling from you is big. And so that sort of stuff is big for me. I think warranty is the big one. Feeling is, I don't know. I think feeling is one of those things that, especially as you shop high end, a lot of, you know, retailers and people are going to try to make you feel important. And, you know, it's that sort of like icing on the cake that makes you spend the extra dollars. But that only goes so far with me. It's nice to a degree, but warranty is big, man. Like, let me tell you. So I had like one experience this week and I was kind of dreading this experience. I have a Hydro Flask, and the top cap of the Hydro Flask that I have, I've now bought a second one because the first one, after, I don't know, a year or something like that, it's the like flip top kind where it's like a straw you suck through, and it just gets like old and it's not making a good suction, and I clean it thoroughly, but it's, you know, it's basically, it's like, sounds like air is going through it. And so I had bought a second one, like, I don't know, 6 or 8 months ago, and now this one's starting to do it, and I'm like, okay, cool, I'm not gonna go buy another one. This is like $10 every 6 months that I'm spending now on my water bottle. So let me check out their warranty. So I check out their warranty on their website, and it says it's lifetime. I'm like, okay, what does it look like to actually get a new Hydro Flask cap for this, you know, thing? And I was fully prepared for them to be like, you need to submit a receipt, and we need to have you ship it to us, and, like, you know, everything under the sun, just sort of those nightmare online experiences where you've got to ship everything back. I filled out this form, not knowing what I was going to have to do other than just like, here's your address, here's how you contact me, and so on and so forth. 3 hours later, I get an email. No worries. Don't have to send it to us. We're sending you one in the mail. Cool. I'm a Hydro Flask customer for life if that's the sort of service I'm going to get. Like, hey, I do have a problem with my product. You're going to be totally cool with it and just like send me another one so that I can, you know, get back to my life and don't have to like constantly be you know, I will buy 3 more Hydro Flasks because of something like that. And there will be one in the car, one in the bedroom, one everywhere. You know, it's that sort of stuff that makes me want to come back to them, if that makes sense.
So that's kind of a combination, right, of warranty and service, right, where someone's going to stand by their product, and in standing by their product, they're just going to eat the, you know, $1 for the cap on your Hydro Flask and send you another one, because it's worth keeping you as a customer so you can buy another, you know, $40 Hydro Flask off of them in a year. So, but I agree with you 100%. I think that any company that, like I said, is willing to stand by their product and prove that at the drop of a hat is awesome and will definitely get me kind of coming back to that company. And a lot of the stuff that, you know, I buy, and, you know, I make fun of you all the time for your Lululemon, you know, shorts and stuff like that. And I know you've mentioned they have an awesome warranty, but like, I shop a lot of Patagonia stuff now, right? And I like their stuff, and I think it's great. And they do have like awesome warranties as well, where it's like, hey, you know, we'll fix this if, you know, something's wrong with it. And I think any company that's willing to stand by their product is going to have the biggest kind of sway whether I'm going to be loyal to that company or not.
If you're willing to stand by your product, I'm definitely much more inclined to like you, and you're going to curl my toes, if you will. And the other thing that curls my toes is long warranties. I mean, I understand with certain products there has to come an end where something is supported, and that's fine. If something exits a warranty and then I have to pay for it. But any company that, you know, is willing to cover me for a significant amount of time is, you know, a big plus too, because that speaks to their reliability. And, you know, for me, one of these makers or one of these companies that comes to mind is G Technology. They make the, you know, some of the hard drives, the external hard drives out there. I've always been kind of partial to them because a lot of times their warranties are like 3 years or 5 years. And I'm like, okay, if you're willing to warranty a hard drive for 3 to 5 years, considering we've had conversations on this show about, you know, essentially the chaos that's going on inside your hard drive and that they will fail, you know, at any time, whenever they want, without you caring about their feelings, and delete your data. And they're willing to pick up the, hey, we will fix or replace your hard drive, whatever we need to do, up to 3 to 5 years later. I think that's big, because it wasn't that long ago, and I think it's still common practice to have 1 year warranties on hard drives.
Maybe our podcast logo shouldn't be a hard drive anymore, because you just mentioned that they're chaos and they're not expected to last 3 years. And
that's a good point. Yeah, should we just make it like a solid state hard drive now? We're
little slot of like DRAM, just yeah. But like, to your point, right? Like, an amazing warranty is going to definitely get you coming back. So the other thing, I think, you know, we mentioned a bunch of reasons, and I think those are all just reasons for companies to be, you know, good at doing business. But you also put in here iconic, which I think kind of goes back to our fanboy mention, you know, towards, you know, the beginning of the episode. So do you want to touch on that a little more? I mean, do we want to like even touch on the fanboy aspect? I know you kind of said like, hey, we can acknowledge that it's there, but is there any more you want to say on the fanboy side? Because there are people who will blindly buy something just because, you know, they like the brand or they like what it is, and they may stay, let's say, for the amazing customer service or the warranty, or they may not. So are we talking about like the serial fanboys who will just support a company no matter what, even if, let's say, they only warranty something for 30 days? And in the G-Tech example, let's say the hard drive dies 30 days later and they have to pay $30 to get it shipped, you know, to the company, and then wait 4 weeks and get one shipped back. And but they'll still buy one the next time because they just are fans of the company. I mean, is there any more you want to say about that? Or
yeah, I mean, I think there are always going to be fanboys, and I think that's where you start to bleed out of brand loyalty to, you know, just to that, you know, more title of fanboy. I mean, are they still loyal? Yes, they're very loyal. Of course they are. And, you know, companies that come to mind when I think this are the companies like, to me, Disney and Nike just stick out like sore thumbs in my head. You know, the people that are like, I'm an annual pass holder. Man, I can tell you, in Southern California, especially when I was really, really young, I was, you know, just getting in college and stuff like that, there were some people that like, I knew were making just, you know, minimum wage jobs in college, working, you know, rent with like, you know, five roommates, and they would not stop the annual pass for Disney. You know, they were willing to pay the, you know, I was like, this financially probably doesn't make a lot of sense, but I'm glad you're having fun with it. And I mean, those are the fanboys, you know, those are the people that were, you know, checking Twitter for the latest, you know, releases that Disney was going to release of some random new toy that was so hot and sought after, you know, and you needed to be at Disneyland on this day at this time at this store to get it, and there was only going to be 200. And I mean, that sort of stuff is fanboy. You know, sneakers are a huge fanboy, you know, section. You know, you buy a lot of these people, you know, sign up for, you know, all sorts of services so they can pre-order their sneakers. They get their sneakers from Nike or whoever. They get a pair of Jordans. They put them on, you know, in their dead stock in their closet. They never touch them, or they wear them like super sparingly, or they go sell them on like underground, like, you know, or I'm not gonna say underground, but like, you know, like, you know, just random third party websites that are like for sneakerheads. The one I know of is called StockX. And, I mean, these guys like, you know, turn a profit. Like, I definitely know some people that are like, you know, way into that, and they do these, like, I bought them for $150 and I'm selling them for $375, $400 a, you know, pair, and making, you know, some cash on the side selling a pair, but they'll wait a year or two. And so those are the fanboys to me. And I think there is a time and a place for those people, but it is a lot more just a, impulse buy on anything and everything that that brand comes out with than a logical decision, because you know, could they go without it? Most certainly. You know, most of these people are not doing that sort of stuff because they need it, like you or I would do in the areas of service or warranty. We need something and we're just researching it very in depth before we commit to that decision. A lot of these people, when they buy these sort of things, it's not that they're out of sneakers, or it's not that they are, you know, need the Disney, you know, item that you can buy at the store. They're just doing that to fulfill a need or a passion or a want.
Gotcha. So I guess that's really cool, you know, to kind of point out that you mentioned these people are fans of this product, right? You know, but they don't make it easy to, let's say, buy the product, or, you know, they don't give you like any real benefit to kind of being so loyal. So the other thing I kind of want to point out is like, yeah, there are some perks to having brand loyalty, correct? And if you're a loyal customer, sometimes that comes with, you know, some benefits. So do you know of any perks for having brand loyalty, or do you think that's a true statement, or anything else to say on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think brand loyalty is something that, you know, can come with perks, especially some companies do some sort of, you know, points program, punch card. Yeah, I mean going back to our food example, Flame Broiler, you know this, they had like a some sort of like system where I think it was like 10 and you get one for free or something like that, or you know, there was always something like that, or like one day a week they had a special. They always did things like that, and even if we consider, you know, other options, there's point systems, there's credit cards that get you loyalty points for something. I know that's something my dad did. He literally has a credit card that is a GM credit card that he turns in points for, you know, thousands of dollars off his car when he goes and gets one next time. You know, it's something that is definitely an option. I think you have to be careful with those sort of things though, because it's not always, you know, what meets the eye. You know, obviously, especially in options with a credit card, you're paying interest. So let's be careful there. If you're paying interest, you're probably not getting ahead. And the loyalty can help though, from the perspective, I think more than anything, of the intangible relationships you build. If you frequent the same location over and over and over and over again, you're going to begin to build a relationship with the people that work there. And that relationship, I think, is more important than sometimes the brand loyalty, because you often will start to, you know, move past a transactional experience with the people that are there into something more of a friendship with those people, and kind of have a relationship. You know each other on more than a first name basis, and that can lead to perks that I think are the intangible ones, the ones that are like, occasionally they'll let you know something is coming up ahead of time. You know, maybe they weren't supposed to 100% let that slip, but you're on the inside, you know. Maybe they get you in on a friends and family discount. Maybe they, you know, say, you know what, don't worry about the drink this time, or, you know, whatever. Like there are those sort of things that kind of can come up, I think. And I'm not saying you should go looking for those, but I think that naturally comes. I mean, we're all human, and we see how often someone comes in and, you know, is visiting or frequenting a business, and, it's kind of one hand washing the other, if that makes sense.
Yeah, man, I want the Cheers experience. I want to walk in where everybody knows my name.
Well, good luck for that. I mean, that is going to be hard to top. A few stores will give you that experience, I think.
Well, so I agree with you on that sense. And I think it's really good that you bring up the point where you are making relationships with people, right? And that's not necessarily a brand loyalty as opposed to like just actually being a human and experiencing and connecting with individuals. And like you said, you can get perks from that, but that's just because you have a relationship with somebody, right? And I don't want to say that, you know, like that's, you know, kind of paving the way for the relationship, or like that's one of the payouts for having that relationship. It almost sounds like you said, moving past transactional, but I think it's important to bring up that you do form a connection with people as you go to an establishment. But let's take the face off the establishment, right? Like, let's just say it's the brand, right? And you mentioned some of the perks of like, okay, yeah, they have credit cards, they have this, they have that, right? They have a points-based system or a, you know, frequent purchase ones. But I mean, when you take people out of the equation, which I think is when you deal with a brand, you know, people very much represent the brand. And I think that can only be done to a certain extent. Like there's only so much control someone can have over a brand, and more you're just dealing with that person. And is that person a great person? Like, yeah. And that's why, you know, you have these perks, is not necessarily because the brand is letting you do this, right? But it's the person that you have kind of this loyalty to at that point, right? It's like, hey, I only want to go here when this person's working, or I know I'm going to have an awesome experience when this person is there. But are there any other perks that, you know, you want to call out for just buying a lot of a brand? Like, not excluding the people, but I mean, I was trying to think of this, you know, as I, you know, put this in there, I was like, okay, well, yeah, frequent flyer, right? Like, I know there's times where I've called customer service, right, for something that I have, let's say, a bunch of products, and they can see, you know, your history, and it is a different experience. And like, that goes back to the human equation. But I think also, like, hey, if you have five things, you know, there's even like volume discounts. It's like, if you're buying your second one, or if you're buying a new version or upgrades, right? I think that's another brand loyalty thing, right? We didn't even mention that, right? A lot of people say like, hey, you had version 4, you want to upgrade to version 6? Like, go ahead, let's do that. And we'll discount it because you already kind of paid us money, and we'll kind of discount that if you remain loyal to us and buy the next version.
Yeah, so you definitely bring up a good point that sort of softening the blow of upgrades, is especially in the world of the tech with software, is a huge brand loyalty you know, issue, or not issue, but just sticky point for people. I think the other major one you kind of touched on, and we didn't really flesh that out, is is almost an ecosystem kind of brand loyalty point, is that the perk of sticking with one consistent brand means you know them and they know you well. You know the ins and outs of, you know, said company and what you're getting every time. You know what to expect, you know how things should go roughly, and if something is off, you're bound to probably catch it, unlike you know, someone else probably who's just, you know, isn't used to that brand. The other thing I think that is that I think of a company like Amazon. I'm personally not very brand loyal to Amazon, but I see why a lot of people are, because Amazon is a nice service that when you log into your Amazon account and you're like, hey, when did I buy that item? You know, I have a really easy way to find all that because I shop specifically through Amazon then. You know, it's all your stuff all in one place, and that's what makes it sticky and something that is a perk for, I think, most users, to be able to go to just one place and find all of my receipts for everything I purchased in the last year. Also, I can just conveniently, while I'm there, order my groceries, order, you know, pantry stuff, order, you know, toilet paper if I need to. Everything can be ordered there. And so that's what makes that super, you know, important for, I think, most customers. And so that's a kind of another intangible one, is that just having it all in one ecosystem. You use this example, I think, in frequent flyer, or just, you know, kind of that realm. But I think there is a degree of brand loyalty that way. And we didn't really even talk about flights, but I definitely am brand loyal to airlines. And I think most of us kind of are. That's we've all had those horrible experiences on one airline, and we're like, yep, I'm never flying them again.
Yeah. Airlines are one where it only takes one bad experience for you to like just completely abandon that brand. And most of the time, if you have a good experience on a flight, you're more apt to kind of just keep that going, because flight rewards are huge. You know, once you kind of get on that whole flights, you know, status, you know, hunt, it's something that a lot of people will just basically live their lives on. You know, I want to, you know, get to Delta, you know, level, whatever, you know, ultra platinum, you know, flyer. And it reminds me of this movie. It's called Up in the Air. I don't know if you've ever seen it. I don't know why I'm asking you, because the answer is probably no. So Up in the Air was with George Clooney and Anna Kendrick. And George Clooney basically flies all around the United States firing people. Like, that's his job, is to be basically like the bearer of bad news, and to basically tell people that they're getting laid off or they're getting fired. And he basically goes, he's like the pro traveler. He knows all the travel tips. He stayed in all the hotels. He has all the rewards points. And he basically becomes the United Airlines elite member, where they only have, you know, I think under 50 of, you know, those members. And they get like a special like platinum card, you know, and just like a membership card. And then they get to sit down with the captain, and it's an interesting movie. But flights are definitely one thing where I think a lot of people stay loyal. And I think it's good that you bring that up, because there are definite perks to flying with someone over and over and over again. More so, I think, than a lot of other different businesses.
I think it's important to say that this is really interesting. Have you ever priced out like a business class flight or an international like first class flight? Like, have you ever done the math on that, Adam?
I haven't, because I always fly coach. I always fly the cheapest that I can fly, so I've never priced out anything else.
Okay, no worries. So I'm just going to put some numbers out here, and I think you're going to probably like go bananas for a half second here. But a lot of times when I would fly international to Europe, there is the price you pay, you know, normally, and then there's the price that I pay, and then use credit card points to upgrade. And credit card points are, of course, huge. We're really pounding on that now. But I'm going to log into the website and buy a ticket is insane. Like, I don't even want to know what the markup is on that and like what the seat value is versus like the actual, you know, what they're taking, you know, over a coach seat. Because like business class is something like $8,000, I think, like one way or something like that. It's ridiculous.
I knew it was stupid. You know, I know it's stupid expensive, but that's where you start getting like these reward points. That's where they pay off, right? Because there was a podcast that I listened to not a while back where it was basically this guy, and it was all about hacking rewards points and almost like hacking the brand loyalty system, right? And it was to the point where this guy's like, yeah, so I use a credit card, you know, that gets me 5% cash back at, you know, Office Depot. And when I want to take, you know, everyone out to lunch, I'll go to Office Depot and I'll buy a bunch of gift cards for the restaurant that we're going to because I get the, you know, cash back from the Office Depot transaction. And then I have the gift cards and I'll go pay for lunch. So it's basically a way for me to get the most cash back, not even shopping at, you know, the place. I'm just buying gift cards to shop at other places. And he mentioned, you know, flights and hotels too. And the way doing that is like, hey, you know, if you want to get to elite gold status, you know, it's like you're going to have to fly and you'll have to fly business class a couple times, pay that big amount because you earn so many more points. And then after that, you start doing the free upgrades, like you mentioned, right? You're upgrading with the points and with the loyalty. So I know that the airline markup, right, is ridiculous, right? Because when you take a per pound basis of, you know, how much people are paying to, you know, fly that plane up in the air and land it somewhere else, it's atrocious in a way. And I know there's a whole bunch of, you know, research that's been done on, you know, price fixing for airlines and the whole, you know, demand hike. And it's, I don't know. I've never priced out a business class flight. I'm not surprised that it's $8,000. I know you said you're like, oh, you'll probably like freak out. I'm like, no, I knew it was probably really expensive. And to be honest, like you're just sitting, you know, a couple rows up from me. So
yep. So business is like $8,000, and like I've seen first class seats like as high as like $20,000.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, if you got the money, you got to spend it on something, and it's all just a business expense, so you can write it off on your taxes. So, you know, hey.
Oh God, $20,000 to go from. I mean, I start anytime I hear numbers like that, I'm like, okay, I'm on this plane for like 9 hours. Is this really worth like $2,000 an hour? Like, no. There are a few things in life that are worth $2,000 an hour, and most of them are illegal. So,
whoa, all right there. So speaking of illegal, right? So we talked about all these great things about brand loyalty, and we've now kind of started touching on like some of the darker side. Isn't brand loyalty also a bad thing? I mean, I'm thinking in terms of, there can be complacency in the market, right? Because with a lack of competition, if everyone's going towards one place, and let's say, and this kind of gets towards a monopoly argument, but let's say there's a brand out there that offers this insane brand loyalty and people just remain loyal to that brand no matter how bad it is. This kind of touches on the fanboy aspect too. But doesn't that kind of remove some competition in a marketplace or make it harder for people to get into if there's all this brand loyalty around there? How do you pull someone out of that into your service, and then how do you then sway them to be loyal to you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think brand loyalty works counter towards competition. It's something that definitely stifles competition, doesn't allow for that growth there. And so I don't know that it's necessarily a great thing. There has to be some amount of movement in any market, if you will. And if you look at I'm gonna forget his name right now, but he's done a couple of TED Talks, and I'll get one of the links for his talk on in the show notes. But he talks about the I think it's called the law of diffusion of innovation, and it's basically he talks about how you get people that are going to essentially be early adopters, and those are the people that are probably the least brand loyal, right? They're willing to hop to any platform. They are willing to create an account and just move. And who cares if they lose data or something goes wrong or whatever, they're always on top of stuff. And then you've got people that are in the next set of people. And I forget the verbiage he uses, but it's 10-15% again. And then you get the majority of people, and then you get what are called the laggards, at the very end, the people that are holding on to their stupid flip phones today still. And I think when I think of competition and I think of, what brand loyalty does, it really keeps most people in that center category. And sure, there are always a few people that are flipping over and trying that new stuff, but it takes, you've got to win over that first group of people almost entirely to start to get the shift of the rest of the people, because it's going to take 5-10% of the population to just be like, okay, yeah, this is definitely game changing by a factor of 10 before you're going to get the market to move. Otherwise, the market is going to probably just stay stagnant. And that's where I don't know that brand loyalty is the best thing, but I really can't say that I could see us being so crazy that we're all over the place either. I don't know that that would really help us in any way, because there are benefits to brand loyalty.
So yeah, there are definitely benefits to having it, right? And we've called out all of those, but I guess the only worry that I have, right, is, like you said, it's a majority issue, right? Where you're always going to have the people who are willing to jump from one place to another, right? And those are the people that are going to try to drive, businesses or drive new ideas and be open to kind of leading the charge, so to speak. But let's just use an example here. It's like Facebook, right? People are brand loyal to Facebook, and Facebook has done some pretty shitty stuff in the last, couple years or since they were founded, right? Like, you just watch a documentary about how Facebook started and it's not the prettiest story, right? But people remain loyal to them for all the reasons that we kind of mentioned. But is that a good thing? In the grand scheme of things, like, probably not. You're talking about now removing a giant level of competition because people are just so stuck onto this platform. And you're going to have people that are ready to jump, like this whole hashtag delete Facebook, thing. It's like, yeah, I'm ready to get away from this brand. Like, that's fine. I have no affinity to them or no loyalty to them. I don't have to stay here. But where else can you go? Where else is a place that's going to be as big as Facebook or offer as much as Facebook? And how long are they going to be around? Because how can something like that survive when there's a company that's 5 million times bigger than you are with all of these loyal users that are loyal, let's say, out of, some of the more negative reasons is because everyone's there and it's sticky and hard to get out of. But how do you foster competition in that type of environment? I think it's really tough. And I think that's what really scares me, especially when we start talking about tech, right? Because that landscape changes a lot, and because there's more and more people kind of getting into, these services, once one hits critical mass, it's tough to leave. It's really tough to leave. And you mentioned the ecosystem, right? Like, yeah, it's tough to get out. So how do you shift that? Like, how do you then make a stance against, a company that's not doing the right thing or not doing what you feel is the right thing when you're just a small little percentage of the bigger piece of the pie?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a huge problem to solve. I don't know that there is a... I have to agree. I think it is a bad thing. I just don't know that I have the wherewithal to know what is going to make it better.
Oh, that's not what I'm asking, because I mean, like, we're not smart enough to figure that out. I'm just saying, like,
yeah. And what I was hoping to get, though, is just some degree of idea as to, like, I mean, I'm totally in agreement that it has, I think, some bad tendencies. It definitely hardens some things that are not always so good, and it fosters the idea of power, giving companies power, which, I mean, it's arguable, right? Like, it can be good, but it can also be easily abused. And, you know, that's kind of something we're seeing with, you know, with the Facebook right now is that, you know, Facebook is, it's funny. I just said the Facebook, which isn't that like their original name. But it's, you know, it's something that they are struggling with right now. And it's going to be really hard for a lot of these companies to, it takes a long time to eat away at their market share because of how sticky they are and how big they are and all that. But I think it does stifle competition, which probably isn't for the best, because if these people did have to, you know, have any amount of competition at all, they would be forced to make changes to a lot of their policies.
Yeah, agreed. So let's move on to something a little lighter. So we talked about all this brand loyalty, and I know you've kind of mentioned some of the brands that we both have brand loyalty to, but let's just take a moment. So Lou, what are your biggest brand loyalties? I mean, you can say your top two, your top one, your top three, whatever you want to do. Just what are your top or your biggest brand loyalties?
So I guess the big ones I put in here are just like I rattled four off right away that just came to mind when I was thinking about this document when I was writing it. But Apple is one. Lululemon, we all know that. Hydro Flask. Honda is definitely the car drive. I've been really happy with their service and overall it's just been. It's nice to have a car that I don't really worry about reliability on. Another one that comes to mind that I guess I didn't really put in here is shoes wise. I always go to Vans. I've always been a Vans fan. Just something I go to, and I always have a couple pair of Vans at the top of the closet, ready to go.
A couple pairs? Like, whoa, what? Like, you know, fresh pairs of the same shoe? Because I know you like to do that.
So not always the same shoe, but, yeah, you're going to kind of hate me if I say how many pair I have up there. I think at the moment it's 9.
I mean, are they all kind of the same style shoe? I mean, Vans, you know, you can get, I guess you can't get too crazy with the different styles of Vans. So they're all basically just sneakers, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, they have their canvas, you know, shoe. It's called the Authentic. I definitely have a couple pair of Authentics up there. I've got a couple pair of high tops that are up there. And then more as of recent, because as I get old, my injured ankles that I had some injuries when I was younger with are starting to have more and more problems, and I can't wear the flat Vans constantly like I could when I was 20. And so I'm starting to use a lot more of their collection called the Ultra Range, which is essentially, it pretty much looks like a Nike shoe, you know, in a lot of ways it's a Vans Nike. It's got a thicker sole, a little bit more arch support. They're so lightweight and have sort of the Vans style to them, but they're very similar to a Nike sneaker. So I have a couple of those.
You've got 9 pairs of shoes, so you have 3 times as many pairs of shoes as I do.
Well, that's not like total shoes. That's just unopened shoes. Total shoes is like got to be.
Wait. Okay, back up. Sorry, I must have missed that point. So these are all shoes that are new in box?
Yeah, new in box, bro. And I mean, we should back up too, because I know someone who works at Vans. So going back to our brand loyalty point here, every one of these is bought on friends and family. So
this is like deja vu, man. Like, this is like pure deja vu about talking about hoarder stuff. Like, okay. So yes, you're a Vans fan, obviously. And Lululemon, of course, right? Hydro Flask, I think you're on cloud 9 because of your quick turnaround for your whatever. and then Honda, because dude, Hondas will run into the ground. Like, great, great cars. Like, I think the Nissan truck I have, it's no secret that that thing has over 260,000 miles on it, I think, at this point. I have to double check that. But it's got a ton of miles on it. And then I know my mom is still driving a Honda that has at least 200,000 miles on it, too. And those cars, like, they'll just, as long as you treat them right, you just change their oil and do the scheduled maintenance and take care of them and don't, you know, for lack of a better term, rice them out and treat them right, keep them stock. Like, they're great cars. So as far as, like, my brand loyalties, I really struggled with this. Like, I really did. Because part of it is I actually kind of give a lot of negative connotation to brand loyalty. Like, I don't view it as a good thing for the reasons I mentioned earlier. But I don't feel like it would be good to be tied down to something. Like, I would love to be able to jump to anything no matter what. But that being said, I definitely am a fanboy of things, which is not the greatest thing either. But Nintendo comes to mind for me. Like, I will almost blindly buy whatever Nintendo makes. Like, the Switch came out, and I realized I should have blindly just pre-ordered that when I heard about it, because it was Nintendo, and they did a good job. But, like, I bought a Wii, I bought a Wii U, like, I had a Super Nintendo, I had a GameCube, I had N64. Like, Nintendo is one of the gaming consoles that I will always, always buy. I mean, I had Game Boys, like, I had all of that. So Nintendo is definitely on my list. The other one that I'm putting on there is Costco. Because, fuck, man, I go to Costco all the time. And I don't know what I'd do without Costco. Because I got a bunch of mouths to feed, and we got to buy toilet paper in bulk. And, you know, like, Costco's the best place to do it. Like, I know there are other membership places, but there are some perks to being a Costco member, you know, especially when you get that executive level. You get to go in an hour before everyone else. They also got that food court. See, Costco's another one. They keep you in that ecosystem, right? Like, you walk into a Costco and you know you're just buying just way more than you expected to. So I think those are the two biggest ones that I have, is Nintendo and Costco.
So what I got out of that is you got mouths to feed and butts to wipe, because you got a lot of buy a lot of toilet paper, right?
Yeah, man. Mouths to feed, butts to wipe, and then new clothes to put them in.
Got it. So Costco's a big one. I struggle to buy at Costco because of I got one mouth to feed, so I don't really have this need where I've met the critical mass of Costco yet, which I guess you could argue in some ways, like, why haven't I? Because, as you say, I'm a hoarder, but I'm not really a physical hoarder. Like, I mean, the shoes thing, yeah, I've got shoes.
Well, you physical, you just said you did 9 pairs of shoes. That's a physical thing.
Yeah, but, like, in the grand scheme of, like, my room and, like, my house and all that stuff, like, all of it's pretty clean. Like, I don't keep a lot of stuff around. There's no reason for me to have, like, 48 rolls of toilet paper on hand. There's absolutely no reason for that. But, you know, there will become a day when I'm married and I have kids, and I think Costco, if I had to predict, man, like, I could totally see myself loving Costco. I just, I understand. I go to it right now for, like, you're gonna laugh. I go to Costco for gas because they have cheap gas. Don't get me wrong. And I go to Costco for, like, very specific things. Like, I'll go get, like, toothpaste, because guess what? Toothpaste is not going to go bad. You know what I mean? Like, if it's a food item, I'm not buying 20 chicken breasts. It'll take me so long to get through that, you know?
Yeah, 20 chicken breasts only lasts us, like, a month, maybe. Yeah, Costco is, it's definitely, once you have the need for it, you go, right? But like I said, there are other things that I could do. Like, I could just buy, you know, my toilet paper a couple rolls at a time, or, you know, I could do that somewhere else. But the convenience of Costco, you know, keeps me going. And the fact that they have a food court and I can buy lunch for less, for the whole family, for less than $7, like, and that's like pizza and hot dogs and drinks and everything. And then we can even go get dessert, right? Like, it's another, like, dollar something to get a frozen yogurt, you know? So yeah, Costco's great. So I think that's pretty good. That at least gives me some insight as to your brand loyalty and gives some people some insight as to mine. But on the flip side is, do you boycott any brands? And if so, why?
Yeah, I definitely do. I'm struggling more with the why than anything. So Dropbox is one I kind of boycott. This is the one that I struggle the most with the why, because they've got a lot of good sides to them. I don't agree with their storage pricing, at least at this point. It really hasn't changed since like 2012. And let's just kind of be honest, like storage has changed since 2012. So cool for them. Their profit margins are probably, through the roof now, because you pay like $99 a year for the same like 1 terabyte you did, 5 years ago. But I also don't 100% agree with some of their privacy and encryption policies and so on and so forth. So for me, that's the main why there. And now that Dropbox was also early to the game. So, for a little while, they were the one that everybody was switching to. And today, that just has changed. There's just so many options out there for cloud storage. Are they doing it better than Dropbox? That's questionable. But can I get more of the privacy for less of the dollar value somewhere else? Yeah, I basically can.
So this is just like that Facebook argument too, right? Where it's like, hey, Dropbox is probably just living off of, the giant mass of users that they gained when they started. And they're just kind of living on that, right? Those people are loyal because their whole life is in Dropbox, or their whole business or whatever. It's all in Dropbox. So they paid into the plans because they needed more storage, and now they're there. Now they're kind of sticky and it's easier. But like you said, the landscape changed around them. So this kind of goes to the competition thing, right? It's like, how do you eat Dropbox's lunch when they're owning the market? Like, well, the whole cloud storage, game kind of changed. So I guess this is kind of the positive end of things, right? Or this is the nice outcome of what could happen with like a competition, is all these other companies start springing up, and now Amazon, who has been neglecting to change, is kind of, content with riding the wave that they came in on, will eventually fade. But I can see why. But continue. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Dropbox is one. Amazon is kind of my number two here. I said in the outline to a degree, and I mean that because I can't say I don't use their service ever. I won't pay them for Prime, that's for sure. I mainly, convenience is great with their service, don't get me wrong. And while I think from a website perspective, it's a nightmare to look through the website a little bit sometimes. You got to know where to look to find everything. It's so much information. But I think the other thing that is most interesting about them is that I just don't agree a lot with how they treat their labor, how they treat their employees. I've just heard horror stories about the overtime, how they, are timing everybody. There's a metric for every little tiny thing inside the company. And I understand efficiency, and I understand big picture things that companies want to get done, and that, you have to have some way to hold employees accountable. But I don't know, man. Anytime I see a company turn from reasonable to what borders sweatshop, that's a big turnoff for me. And that, to me, is what Amazon looks like in a warehouse perspective, is they turn into a sweatshop. And then the other side of it is, I don't exactly agree with their money-making policies. Essentially, they get to look at, everything you look at on the internet, everything you watch online, and then they can use some of that data to like sell stuff to you, So that also has a little conflict of interest for me.
Personalized shopping, the way of the future, man. I kind of live off Amazon willingly because of the convenience, and that's my thing. So I can agree with you on like warehouse conditions, things like that. And it's definitely something that you have to take into account, right? And on my list of things that I boycott, like one of them I feel kind of falls under the same vein as to why is Walmart. Like, we just won't shop at Walmart, mainly because of how they treat their employees. And, you know, there's been all sorts of coverage on how Walmart employees are treated and kind of how they go about, you know, just, and like I said, it's nothing to do with their products. It's their employment, right? And it's more how the company behaves. And I think it's funny that both you and I kind of boycott companies based on that, right? It's not price. It's not this. And you kind of mentioned Dropbox has a price to an extent, but the bigger one is kind of like the moral compass that we have. And it says like, hey, this doesn't feel right. Like, it doesn't feel right what they're doing. And
yeah. And I think it's interesting though, because we mentioned Amazon, we mentioned Walmart, but, and I put Walmart down too. I didn't mention it, but I put it down too. And you know, it's interesting that we both come back to the labor, but I mean, I boycott Walmart for the exact same reason. And to me, the Walmart of the internet is Amazon. You know, I understand they've got convenience, but if I'm really going to, you know, take a stand on something, I got to take a stand and say, you know, I'm not going to use them. I'm not going to pay them the Prime. Maybe I ship a couple things a year, probably less than 5 off of Amazon, and I just ship them for free.
Hey man, they gave me free games. They got my brand loyalty there. When they was like, hey, Adam, you want some free games? I'm like, oh yeah, sure. Thanks, Amazon.
Adam goes running.
Yeah. It's like, well, you did what with the warehouse? What? What are you talking about? I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. I was playing this game. But I think it's a good point, right? Because like you said, you're taking a stand, and I think that's a commendable thing, right? Where you kind of get to a point where you're just like, I don't agree with what's happening, and that's why I'm not going to support this company. And I think that's, you know, it's a powerful message that a lot of people can send. As a collective, it's harder to, you know, just have one person boycott a brand and say like, yeah, I'm not doing this, right? And Taco Bell, the reason I boycott them, and I can say that 6 months ago, they weren't on the boycott list. And in maybe another 2 years, they might fall off the boycott list, and then I'll go again, and then they'll be right back on. Because Taco Bell is one of those things where you kind of just have that weird craving for Taco Bell, where you're just like, you know what? I want some really, really shitty, just really cheap, I know it's not real, you know, just food. And I don't even want to call it like Mexican food, because it's not. I mean, especially what they're doing now with like breakfast and stuff, like it's not good food. And I go there and I pay my $3 and I get a bunch of food for that money. You know, I'm like, man, this is going to be great. And you eat it and you're like, yeah, it's kind of what I expected. Like one of the things is really good and the rest is all just kind of like whatever. But then you wait 2 hours, and then 2 hours later, you realize that you've made a horrible decision. You had a choice and you made the wrong choice. And you are now in the bathroom for a long time. And the next morning, when you're still not hungry, you realize that Taco Bell, you've lost my business forever. I'm sorry, Taco Bell. I will not be getting a beefy 5-layer burrito from you ever again.
Oh, man. Yeah. The food restaurants, man, like, it is a like fine line. I feel like a lot of people, you know, cross, you know, you get to a point where most people, it's like one terrible experience like this at a food restaurant. And most people, it is on their, like, I'm going to call it the shit list forever, you know,
the literal shit list. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Literal shit list. Exactly. Yeah, it is. It's one of those things, man. It's just like when it comes to food, and people have a terrible experience and they spend the night on the toilet, they're like, yeah, nope, not happening again. So, you know, that is one that I think brings people out of the woodworks.
Yep. So Taco Bell, I'm sorry. And like I said, I'm willing to forgive like one food poisoning incident, right? Like, okay, fine. That happens. It happened to me with Jack in the Box. It's happened to me with a bunch of fast food before. I think one time, All right. You know, you give it 6 months and then you feel like, all right, it's safe to go back, and you go back. But Taco Bell, I swear, it's been every goddamn time. Every time I would get it and I give them the 6 months, and I was like, you know what? I'm kind of hankering for that Taco Bell. That sounds really good. And then I go and then I hate it. And then the same thing every single night. Maybe my body just can't handle Taco Bell, but nope, not anymore. Never again. Taco Bell has been boycotted from my list.
That's funny. Good to know. And I will never suggest going to Taco Bell with you because I don't frequent Taco Bell. I honestly haven't probably had Taco Bell in 15 years.
Well, good for you. Don't go back. Ever. Ever.
Yeah, I was always the Del Taco fan if I was going to go, and even that was like 10 plus years ago.
Yeah, and that's another rough one too, man. Like, I get Del Taco. Didn't Jim work at Del Taco too? You mentioned that, I think, at one point. But
I think Taco Bell, actually, I thought, but I don't know now. Now that you actually...
I think it was Del Taco. I'm pretty sure it was Del Taco. But yeah, like, I don't know. And you have the benefit of living in Southern California where you can just go and get, you know, any burritos at any time, right? And it's going to be better. And even if I got food poisoning from a burrito's, like, all right, that's fine. I give them 6 months, you know. I'd go for it again. But, well, cool, man. Anything else you wanted to add about brand loyalty that we missed?
No, man. I actually have to say, I think we went through it pretty well. We got a lot more out of it than I thought we were going to get out of it.
Yeah, man, this outline I made looked pretty pathetic, and I was like, wow, we squeezed a decent amount of information out of this. Hopefully it was good information.
Yeah, man. I came out with my pitchfork about brands I hated, so.
You got to vent, you know. That's great. I got to vent about Taco Bell while I was literally venting, right? Or Taco Bell made me vent or made me purge, whatever you want to say. So in a little bit of a wrap-up here, so I think it's kind of worth mentioning just because I am going on vacation soon without any kids, and it's a very exciting time for me and my wife. We're going to have a great time. Totally looking forward to it. I'm going to leave you for a good, what is it, like 10 days or something like that? I haven't even counted, but I just know it's a long time. That's going to be amazing. But I kind of wanted to ask because it's kind of a something that I'm, since I'm not a frequent traveler, and I know you have definitely traveled more than I have, is there any travel technology that you recommend or that you can't live without? Because I don't have much because we don't travel that often.
Interesting. This is one that is, I guess I would say, not well thought out, but I tend to travel pretty heavy with travel technology. In terms of like what I bring like enough that I could, I feel like, rewire the Pentagon while I'm there. But I don't know, man. I think the one thing I can't live without is just a Mophie juice pack, you know, essentially just some sort of giant battery, whatever you want to call it. I have one that is like 20,000 milliamp hours. I could probably go 6 days without if I needed to. And that's a great one to have. The number two and just slightly behind it is also in the power front. A USB-C tube lightning adapter for my iPhone. The fact that I can fast charge now, that is super nice on vacations because so many times I come back to a hotel room or wherever I've been and you know, essentially I'm just doing a quote unquote pit stop. It's like drop this off, get ready again and go out again for dinner or whatever. And so to be able to quickly charge back up and get to a, you know, acceptable amount. And, you know, I don't know, man, every time I go on vacation, you're using your GPS more, you're always in your camera. So you're going to go through more battery. And so I think anything battery related is big. If you want to get outside of, I guess this isn't necessarily outside of technology, but it's a little more deviated, drone, bring the drone with me. I'm considering a 360 camera as an option. I love some of these unique ways that are coming out to like document trips and locations you've been to. So there are options that way that I'm considering that I think would be super, super cool. So, you know, I mean, those are kind of like secondary, but power is first and foremost. Like, make sure the iPhone and the iPad at least have power throughout the trip.
Yeah, see, and this is one where I'm like, I don't even want to turn anything on. Like, I want to be disconnected. Like, I'm taking the Kindle just so I can read books, but otherwise I'm going to be dead to the world, and I'm okay with that.
Did you load it up with the Dropbox privacy policy on the terms and conditions?
The Dropbox privacy policy. It's funny, like, I've been staring at the Dropbox icon in my menu bar since you went on your little rant, and I'm like, oh, no, I need this. I need this because I need to sync my 1Password vault with the family.
Oh, yeah. Screw that, dude. I freaking uninstalled that damn Dropbox icon like years ago at this point.
dude, there's no good way to share with other people though. Like one password vaults. Like if you find a really good way to share those with, you know, against with multiple people, like let me know. Like how are you sharing your vaults? Oh, you do the one password for Teams thing, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You do the subscription thing. Yeah. No, I'm rocking my free Dropbox account and my free, you know, non-subscription one password. So, you know, I'm not gonna throw money at a problem.
Adam, frugal as fuck.
Yep, exactly. You know me. Well, thank you for the power, you know, recommendations.
Yeah, they won't help you at all.
Yeah, I was like, maybe something to like get me through the plane, right? Maybe there's some cool piece of tech, like I don't know. I shouldn't have even said technology if I was wanted to unplug, but I'm just looking forward to vacation.
When it comes to vacation, man, and like I don't really have any like massive tips and tricks. I mean, you're not going anywhere that you have to be formal, I don't think. And so there's not like you have to bring anything super weird that way. You're just going, man. You get to like kick back, no kids and everything. So that's like a great time. And you know, I kind of respect the like, yeah, I don't think I would want to have the technology either at that point, because no, if the kids were there, it'd be very different. I'm sure you guys would want to document everything and there'd be lots of cameras out and all that good jazz, but it's a lot different when it's just the two of you.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. We're like, dude, this is the time to just focus on me. This is me time. Me and my wife time. Like it's we haven't taken a vacation together alone. I don't know. She's probably gonna tell me how many years it's been, or she's probably gonna say never. But it's been a very long time. So we're looking forward to it. But Lou, I'll leave you for a week. So I don't know. Do you want to mention now or do you want to mention the next episode? What we're going to do?
Sure. I mean, we can start to, you know, pull back that curtain a little bit.
Pull back that curtain.
We're not going up the skirt. No, we're not going that way.
Yeah. Don't mention that. Don't go there. Who would go there? That's horrible.
Damn it, Adam.
Yeah. I'm not even going to be here, so you go ahead and take the reins on that one.
Well, you know, coming down the pike here is hopefully an option to give our users an option to support us a little bit. And so obviously we've talked a little bit about on the show that we have, you know, hosting fees and there's a little bit of cost to keep the show going, and it's not a monumental amount of cost, but it is a cost. And you know, the show takes time and labor to edit and do all that, but we're really not looking to recoup tons of money out of that. But we would love for you to support us. If you think you have a dollar or two or a few more dollars to spare, then we would appreciate it. And so we're working on an option through Patreon for you to support us, and we're working out the tiers, but basically the one I think we're most excited about is the option to listen in to the live stream when we record the show and kind of hear the unedited cut and participate in the chat room, and so you guys can kind of have that live feedback with us. And there's also going to be an option for bonus episodes that won't be released to the normal RSS feed that goes through iTunes, so you'll get some extra content, and that'll be another tier. So we're working on it. It's a work in progress, and hopefully Max, a couple of weeks away, we'll have that up and running.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, the only thing that we're asking is just to make our podcast kind of like a net zero thing, right? Where, you know, we're producing content, and the one thing that our main goal is to keep the lights on, right? And anything else beyond that is just going to go to making the podcast better, right? That's what we're about, is we want to produce a quality podcast, whether that means, you know, getting different equipment, you know, upgrading what we have, or, you know, getting more guests to come on, or getting someone to edit the podcast that we actually knows what they're doing, you know, other than me and Lou, you know, great, you know. But like I said, for us, it's just keep the lights on, keep us running, because we like doing this and we want to keep doing it.
Yeah, so there's some exciting stuff to stay tuned for, and you know, when we've got that all up and working, I will definitely remind you of it, so you can go check it out.
Cool. Yeah, and please, I guess the last little things here is just please, if tell a friend and rate and review us on iTunes. Just go to Apple Podcasts and throw us a rating, leave us a review. It just really helps us, you know, kind of become visible and spread to more people, which is awesome. You can also visit us at creativegeniuscast.com. If you want to, you know, have any feedback or you want to suggest a show topic, just let us know in the contact form there. And otherwise, I don't know. I don't think I have anything else to add.
Yeah, I think we're all good.
Man, so I didn't mean like give away the Patreon stuff. I just wanted to say like, oh, do you want to talk about like that you're going to have a guest next week? Or
oh, well, too bad. Cat's out of the bag.
The last episode, I don't know if you looked at what I finally made it.
The last episode? Did you change it?
Yeah, it wasn't repair something something.
Oh, okay. What did you want it to be then?
It was $100 in a shaggin' wagon.
Oh, okay.
So that has nothing to do with it, right? Like, I made sure that in the description, the very first line says, you know, kind of what we talked about, but...
Did you change it at, like, the last minute or something? Because, like, when I posted that... Yeah, like,
I said I put a filler in there, and I was like, I need to figure out the title, you know, and I'll let you know when I figure it out.
You told me that, and then, like, I posted it at, like, midnight, so I was like, I guess this is what it is. So...
I was up at midnight trying to figure out what I was trying to... freaking do.